Welcome to Talk of Our Towns. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm your guest host today. I'm sitting in for Donna Quinn, your usual host. We are here in Astoria in the run-up to the annual Fisher Poets Gathering, and I'm going to be doing a couple of interviews today with guests. We have on the line today, through a phone patch, Brett Vandenhoevel. He's the executive director of Columbia Riverkeeper. Also in the studio, I have Katrina Porteous. She is a Fisher Poets presenter, a poet, a writer. She's here from the UK, and she is going to be presenting at this weekend's Fisher Poets Gathering. We're going to be talking to her about how she came to be in Astoria and about the fact that the BBC is going to be here doing a story about the Fisher Poets Gathering this year. So the Fisher Poets Gathering is tossing its net way far in the world these days, and we're really happy to be able to talk about it this week. And I'll also be talking about Coast Community Radio's live broadcast of that event. So we're going to start out with Brett Vandenhoevel. He's coming to us from Hood River by phone. Hi, Brett. Uh-oh, do we have Brett on the line?
I thought we did.
Uh-oh. Oh, dear. The miracle of radio. Maybe we can try to get him back on the line, Terry. All right, in the meantime, technical difficulties. La, 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 la. So let me talk a little bit about the Fisher Poets Gathering. This weekend in Astoria, on Friday and Saturday nights, you're going to have a great opportunity to come and hear this and see this wonderful event. It's a kind of a cultural extravaganza all about the fishing, the commercial fishing industry. And so this has been going on. I believe this is the 14th annual Fisher Poets Gathering. For 14 years, commercial fishermen and women have been gathering here in Astoria to celebrate this amazing part of our culture that you participate in, whether you probably know it or not. If you have ever had a fish dinner, you probably were benefiting from the expertise and the persistence and the skill of fishermen and women from all over the world. But especially we celebrate those in general who are from the Pacific Northwest, because that is the kind of the gist of the focus of most of the people who come to the gathering. So at venues all around downtown Astoria, which is kind of a fishing town on the Columbia River in the Pacific Northwest, you'll see people presenting, speaking from their hearts about this gritty, demanding, character-building profession that they are part of. And it is a lifestyle. It's a love. Most of the people that we hear speaking are speaking from the heart about things that have happened to them. And so it's a pretty interesting, well, way interesting event, for a chance for you to soak up this visceral culture of all about the sea. So what's going to be happening with Coast Community Radio then? You can tune in to this broadcast that you're hearing right now, this frequency, 91.9 FM in Astoria, 89.5 FM in Tillamook. You can get us live on the web at coastradio.org. We will be streaming the Fisher Poets Gathering live from the Astoria Events Center in downtown Astoria. We do this every year, beginning at 6 p.m. on Friday and 6 p.m. on Saturday until about 10 o'clock or thereabouts. We will be broadcasting live the wonderful programming of the Fisher Poets Gathering. So this is an Astoria tradition that we have been doing for years here at Coast Community Radio. You can participate in that. We have people listening all over the world to us, and certainly all over the United States to this event. You can hear it live here and only here on Coast Community Radio. So how are we doing, Terry, with our phone? It's not going to work. Okay. Well, that's interesting. Opportunity to recap a little bit. Well, let me just tell you a little bit about
Joanne will call you as soon as you get off the air.
The person who was going to be my guest, and I can tell you a little bit about what he would have said had he been here. the joys of community radio. My guest would have been Brett Vandenhoevel. He is the executive director of Columbia Riverkeeper, which is an environmental organization that has been tremendously instrumental and continues to be very influential in environmental issues on the Columbia River. They have been involved in protecting the estuary from various threats, and Brett is going to be giving a presentation at the Fisher Poets Gathering. I was hoping to talk with him about that presentation, but you can look it up in the Fisher Poets Gathering schedule online. You can just Google Fisher Poets Gathering and there will be a schedule. Brett is going to be presenting, talking about some of the really great things that are happening with salmon habitat and restoration on the Columbia, and also talking about further efforts to block LNG projects and other kinds of industrialization projects on the lower Columbia that are Riverkeeper's aim is to protect the estuary and to keep the beautiful vistas that we have here, which are in many ways are a lot like they were in the days of Lewis and Clark, still protected here on the Lower Columbia in a place that is part of the most recently declared national park in the United States. So there's a lot to talk about there. Brett Vandenhoevel will be the presenter, and we were hoping to talk a little bit about salmon habitat and other issues here during the show, but that's just not going to happen. Our phone patch equipment just kind of pooped out on us. So we'll do the best we can. I think those of you who are familiar with Riverkeeper know that they're a great organization, a lot of great people working for environmental protections on the Columbia. Check out the Fisher Poets Gathering schedule online, and you can find out where Brett's going to be speaking. I'm sure whatever he has to say will be a wonderful presentation and a great call to action for everyone in our area. And now, why don't we go to our other guest in the studio? I'm very, very happy to have Katrina Porteous here. She is from the UK. Hi, Katrina.
Hi, Joanne. Hello, everyone.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you here in the studio. This is the first time Katrina and I have ever met this morning. We were sitting across the table here in the rotunda of the building here. We call it the rotunda. We can look out over the river. Talking about, she's in Astoria here. She has a very unusual background from our perspective here in the Pacific Northwest. And she's here to participate as a presenter at the Fisher Poets Gathering. She's a writer. She's a poet. She has a long history in the fishing community. So, Katrina, tell us a little bit about you. Where exactly are you from?
I'm from a little village called Beadnell, which is on the northeast coast of England, very close to the Scottish border.
That is just so. Do you have any midnight sun things? Like, do you have lots of short days in the winter and long days in the summer? Are you close enough to the Arctic Circle to have any of that?
No, it's not quite that close. But I did spend a year in the Shetland Islands a few years ago, and that was very, very dark in the winter. It only got a couple of days of sunlight. But where I am, it's just it's just about as far north in England as you can go, but not as far north as some of those places.
So is that your home? Hometown? How long have you lived there?
It's where my grandparents lived. So when my grandparents died, I moved into their house. So that's nearly 30 years ago.
Wow. So tell us a little bit about how you came to be involved with the fishing industry and became a writing about it. Tell us about that.
Okay, well, I have always written poetry all my life. And when I came to live in my grandparents' house, here I was overlooking the sea. And I love the sea. And I thought, I want to know as much as I can about this. And who do I go to talk to find out about the sea, but the people who work with it? So in my village, it's rather a sad story, because the kind of fishing that goes on there has gone on for hundreds and hundreds of years. In fact, thousands of years. We have thousands of years of fishing history. It's been documented right back to the 1300s. But in my lifetime, it's been kind of dwindling, and whereas there were six boats fishing from the village when I was a child, now there were only three boats going. So I went to talk to the fishermen, and they were nearly all old men, and men rather than women, because I understand you have women here who are fishermen. But where I come from, it's all, you know, there are almost without exception no women. So I went to talk to the old men to find out about their way of life and their fishing, and I just got so drawn into it, because as anyone who fishes knows, it's not a job, it's a way of life and a culture.
Well, were they receptive to you as a woman coming to talk about them about their work?
Initially, not very receptive. I mean, they're famously hostile to women. In fact, it's a very, very tight-knit community to start with. So, people tend to be related to one another. As an outsider coming in, I was something very strange. And then, as I say, they consider it unlucky to have a woman even around the boats, let alone on the boats. So that was a bit of an issue for a while. But gradually, there was one fisherman in particular who was in his 80s, and his name was Charlie Douglas. And he was the most wonderful character, Charlie, and sort of the head fisherman of the village. And he had no sons. And in fact, a lot of the fishermen had no sons and no one to pass on their knowledge to. And when they got to see how keen I was to learn and to do the fishing and to be on the boats and be among them, they quickly got to realize that I wasn't there just to kind of take advantage of them, but I actually wanted to be among them and to be part of that life. And they accepted me then, and for many, many years after that.
So tell us a little bit about the fishing industry there. What kind of fish are we fishing? What kind of fish are we talking about here?
Well, these days, the only fishing there is from my own village is for crabs and lobsters, and then for salmon and sea trout in the summertime. And we're talking about Atlantic salmon, and then what we call sea trout, which are related to salmon.
And what sort of boats? What are the boats like?
Traditionally, the boats were open, clinker-built wooden boats called cobles. That's the local boat. No more than 32 foot long. They were small. In my lifetime, those boats have kind of gone out of use, and they're very, very old. That style of building boats goes back to the Vikings and beyond that to the Anglo-Saxons. So it's a really ancient boat-building tradition. And that in itself has come to an end in my lifetime, which is terribly sad. And now the fishermen use what they call fast workers, which are fiberglass, again, small fiberglass boats with cabins on them. And of course, they have much, much bigger engines, really big, powerful engines. And so you have to fish much more intensively just to work those boats.
Well, are the now what does that term clinker built mean?
It means that the planks are overlapping. They're
also lapstrake. I guess that's what we would call
okay.
that in the United States.
Okay. You either have a carvel built boat or a clinker built boat. So
yeah.
carvel you have to have like oakum. You have something between the planks to but clinker built they're overlapping.
Oh, okay. So almost like shingles on a roof.
Exactly.
For the person who might be listening to this and not familiar with either one. So open boats, wow. So are there any waterways, you know, here one of the big barriers to getting in and out of the river is the Columbia River Bar. It's very, very tumultuous there. So do you have anything comparable there? Are the harbor entrances difficult waters?
I get the impression, I mean, I've only been here for a day, so I've got a lot to learn here, and I'm just like a sponge absorbing everything. But I get the impression that one of the big differences between the kind of fishing that goes on around me and you is to do with scale and numbers, and it's very small scale where I come from. And yes, the harbour entrances in the wintertime, particularly, or when you get a wind off the sea, can be very dangerous, and in the past there's been big loss of life, not in my lifetime, but historically there has. People, in storms, losing their life at sea. But really, because things are much smaller where I come from, I think, these days the harbour entrances, they're not too bad, and they don't tend to go to sea on the days when it's going to be bad, because we have better weather forecasts now, and we know when the weather's coming in.
Well, speaking of weather forecasts, do folks in your part of the country listen to that famous BBC weather report, the shipping forecast? Do you all listen to that?
Oh, yeah, that's an important part of every fisherman's life. Yes, that tells you all the wind directions and, tyne, dogger, German bite, all that.
I love that. It's so great. I think, and I guess it's really kind of a beloved institution in the UK, isn't it?
It is. And, it's a kind of poetry, isn't it?
It
when
is.
You listen to it.
It's wonderful. It's just filled with that great jargon that is so fascinating about all this. Well, I'm another maritime person too. I really relate to what you're saying. So how did you come to be, you've mentioned that you've been writing for decades. So how did you come to be writing about this maritime topic?
Well, as I say, when I went to live in Beadnell nearly 30 years ago, I got to know the old fishermen because I wanted to find out about the sea. And I wanted to be inside their heads because they were fishing in such a traditional way. They didn't have any echo sounders or anything aboard the boats. They just went out to sea, and they knew where they were. They knew everything that was underneath the water. They had it kind of mapped in their heads, and they had that map because they just had generation after generation after generation of experience, and they could find out where they were by what they call the landmarks, lining up trees and buildings on the shore, and then they would navigate by that. And I was just so fascinated by that knowledge, and so in awe of it, really. I wanted to learn as much as I could of that. So those marks and all that knowledge were themselves a kind of poetry. And listening to them talking, I just felt I was absorbing, a very ancient poetry.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So it's, one of the things that we see here at the Fisher Poets Gathering is how much of a cultural event this is. I mean, it's about fishing, but it's about life and culture and belief and faith and all these things that go into taking this tremendous risk to go away from the land where relative safety to this place where anything can happen out there.
That's absolutely it. Charlie Douglas, who I've been telling you about, used to say to me, the sea's the boss. The sea's the boss, Hiddy, he used to say. And I just took from that. I have this tremendous feeling that, you know, we as human beings are just a tiny part of the natural world. And if anybody knows about that, fishermen do, because they're up against it day in and day out. And I just love that respect for nature and that sense that we're the servants of nature. We're not the masters over nature. You know, the sea's the boss.
Wow. Boy, that really is true. We certainly see that here. So now you have a long... The other piece for us here in Astoria with you coming to visit us is that with you is the BBC.
I know, and God bless them. They have made it possible for me to be here. You see, I've been wanting to come to the Fisher Poets Gathering for many years. I first found out about it about 6 years ago, and I've been wanting to come ever since because it seems like my spiritual home. You know, I am a Fisher poet. So... I've wanted to come, and of course it's a long way and expensive to get here. And I have written poems for the BBC in the past, and I've made programs for them in the past. You know, I like doing poetry as speech and poetry as performance, and radio is a natural medium for that. So I got in touch with the producer I work with at the BBC called Julian May, and I said, look, this is something I think would make a very, very good radio. I think, you know, the poetry of fishing is you know, very, very really close to... close to us all, because we've all got to be aware of the environment and aware of our place in nature, and here's something that expresses that. And Julian is from a fishing village himself at the other end of the country, and he understands all of that. So he put in a proposal to BBC Radio 4, which is our national speech radio station, a bit like your NPR, and eventually the proposal got taken up. And so here we are to cover the Fisher Poets Gathering, to make a program about it and to learn from all the Fisher Poets here and to listen to them and talk to them and make a program with their voices.
Boy, that's really something. I mean, we run BBC News here on the station, and I always love it. And I know we have a lot of mariners in the area, too, who listen. And I know that people have told me that the BBC for mariners at sea was such a like a touchstone. When they would hear those tones that the BBC broadcast opens with, it would be like they were sort of home. I mean, even people who weren't from the UK, I've had mariners tell me that when they hear the BBC on our station, it brings back a lot of memories for them of being at sea, because the BBC was the only news for many people.
That's so moving to me to hear, because I know exactly those tones that you're talking about, and the shipping forecast and that very early morning, the little tune they used to play in the early morning when the radio was waking up. I know exactly what you mean. It's like when you're out there at sea and you're very far from human contact, you know, anything like that is a touchstone. It's something that sort of guides you, and I think it's just great to know that was coming from my country, and that's a connection that we share.
It's a worldwide connection for people, and you know, on waters all over the globe, that seemed to be a real thing. Well, you know, when I think about the Fisher Poets Gathering itself here, it's really put together by an intrepid group of local people who are just, they work like mad. It's a fairly small group. They just run pedal to the metal for months, starting in about October, and they put this amazing thing together that is now the BBC is here. It's pretty amazing, you know, and they are kind of under our nonprofit umbrella at Coast Community Radio. They also have associations with the local community college here to sort of sponsor what they're doing, but these people work like mad to put this together and to bring people in from all over the United States. Now you... come to this kind of through an interesting connection. You were involved a little bit with the Cowboy Poetry Gathering in Elko, Nevada. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, that came about. I mean, it all started because I was a Fisher poet. Interestingly, I was writing about something which was authentic and which was based in nature, and the cowboy poetry people got in touch with me via an organization in England, and they wanted to bring over some people who worked on the land, who were connected with the farming community. So they got in touch with me, thinking I might be able to make some contacts for them, and I was lucky enough to work with people in the National Park in England and people who had contact with the Cowboy Poetry Festival in England. And we got together and we found two wonderful shepherd poets from my part of Northumberland. And then I came over with them in 1999, so 15 years ago, I came over with them to Elko, Nevada, and we had the most wonderful week there. They were performing. I was not performing because, of course, I was not a cowboy poet. I'm not a farmer poet. I'm a fisher poet. So I was not asked to perform there. But I went and I introduced them. I introduced them at the gathering. And I remember saying a few words there to the great crowd in that vast auditorium. And I remember saying, well, I don't know very much about farming. But you know what? I think we've got a lot in common because, once again, these are people, if you work with the land, you know, you're in touch day after day, very close touch with nature and those natural elements. And it's so important that we see ourselves as part of nature and not as separate from it. And that's, you know, that's the message both, I think, of fisher poetry and of the cowboy poetry.
Well, there is a gentleman who comes now to the Fisher Poets Gathering who is a cowboy poet. And he does a great poem he's from that Elko group. He's performed there with cowboy poets. And he does this great poem about how we're not so different after all, you know, cowboys and people who work on the land and people who work
absolutely,
on the sea.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, we might be facing in different directions. You know, the cowboys are sort of looking inland and the fishermen are looking out to sea. But in the end, it's all one world. And I think the point of view is very similar. And it has to do. I met John Broderick, who's obviously the founding father of the Fisher Poets.
Yeah,
here.
He's one of the folks who started
a really amazing guy. And we just had such a good conversation in the car coming up from the airport. And he said to me, you know, the thing for him is about authenticity. And I think that's dead right. That's what it is. It's like you're touching something real. You're touching something real in nature, and you're touching something real in people's souls. And whether it's cowboy poetry or fisher poetry, I think that whatever that thing is, it's the same thing. It's something real. And as long as you keep that in sight and you keep in touch with that, you're not going far wrong.
Well, I've, you know, having been to the Fisher Poets Gathering for a number of years, one of the things that you're struck by is the deep love, it's kind of a conflicted love, because it's a really difficult profession and people die all the time, and the people who do, even the people who don't die, suffer and are injured, and somehow through this there's this I wouldn't want to be doing anything else. I mean, in most cases, I mean, some of the people do come and go or go do something else eventually, but there's this powerful, almost like this powerful draw to that.
Yes.
Is a draw to the sea. You know, if people have that in their blood, they kind of can't do much about it, from what I gather. And I feel that myself as being a sailor and a recreational sailor. But you also see that in the people who work on the land. You know,
yes.
Ranchers, people have this tremendous pull to the and love for what they do that goes beyond work and goes beyond what we, you know, having a job. It's much more than that.
Yes, it is. It is, and it's. I mean, I'm just going to learn so much from being here. But I know at home what I feel is it's part of it. It's the individual with something much, much bigger around them and connecting to nature, but not only to nature, but to the community as well. It's that sense that we all rely on one another when we're in that situation where it's just you and the sea or just you and the land. You know, we're drawn together, and that strength of community is a really big part of it, I think.
Well, what I wanted to ask you right now is to give us a poem. And tell us a little bit about it. We talked about this. There's some kind of dialect in this poem. It's a beautiful piece. And tell us a little bit about it first to set the scene for people.
Yes. Well, the fishermen back home speak in a very broad dialect. I will be performing some dialect poetry at the gathering. It won't all be in dialect. Some of it will just be in my own English voice. But this one is in dialect, but I think people will understand it, because I think it's the music of the words that carry you along, and I think the music of the words sort of contains the meaning in it. But what this little poem is about is the salmon fishing at home is something which has gone on forever. We've got documentary evidence of it going right back for nearly 1,000 years, and I'm sure it went back for 1,000 years before that, and probably before that even. You know, it's just been a way of life for human beings as long as there have been human beings. We're between two big rivers, the River Tweed up in Scotland and the River Tyne in England, both of them salmon rivers. I mean, not big on your scale, but big by our little English standards. And so salmon fishing is an important part of the fisherman's life. And I'm sorry to say that in my lifetime, I'm probably going to see the end of it, because the drift netting for salmon has already nearly been stopped. And the set netting for salmon, they're not going to be allowed to pass the licenses on. So as the people who set net for salmon now die, that set netting, which is the most ancient sort of salmon fishing, is going to die with them. So this is a little poem about that. Plenty lang a winter. How I doon the harbour, gan off afore the dawn. Plenty lang a winter to lay a bed our morn. Plenty lang a winter, nean salmon at the bay, and lang enough for sleep, lad, when your livin's rived away. When your livin's rived away, lad, and the big man greeds your keep. Plenty lang a winter, lang enough asleep.
Wow, that was beautiful.
Thank you.
Wow, I can't wait to hear more.
Well, I can't wait to hear everybody. I'm just looking forward to this so much, and thank you so much for inviting me, Fisher Poets. You know,
well, it's wonderful to have you here. I want to let everybody know a little bit about where you can hear Katrina Porteous. She is going to be performing at 8 p.m. on Friday at the Astoria Events Center. That means that you'll be able to hear her on the air live on our Coast Community Radio broadcast beginning at 6 p.m. on Friday and Saturday at the Events Center. Also, she'll be performing at Clemente's Restaurant at 8 p.m. on Saturday. And so you can hear more from her. There's lots of opportunities to hear lots of things this weekend at the Fisher Poets Gathering. I just want to just recap a little bit. We heard earlier in the show, I talked about Brett Vandenhoevel's presentation this weekend at the Fisher Poets Gathering. He's going to be presenting at 11 a.m. on Saturday to 12:15 p.m. That's at the Columbia River Maritime Museum. The topic of his talk is Caring for the Columbia, Addressing Threats to the Health of the Columbia River, Upbeat and Lively with Columbia Riverkeepers Brett Vandenhoevel, and Alexa Wiley will be performing there as well. So a great opportunity and a call to action to help care for the Columbia. I want to thank everybody for listening to Talk of Our Towns today. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm sitting in for Donna Quinn. And I've been interviewing Katrina Porteous. She is a Fisher Poet from the UK. She's going to be, I believe, our first person from the UK to perform at the Fisher Poets Gathering ever. And she's here. The BBC is going to be here. You'll hear more about Katrina and the BBC on Friday on Talk of Our Towns at 3 p.m. with your host, Carol Newman. Katrina will be a guest there as well. So, thanks for listening to Talk of Our Towns. How are we doing on time, Terry?
You got 8 seconds.
I got 8 seconds. Okay, thanks for listening. Don't forget to tune in on Friday and Saturday nights, Coast Community Radio, streaming online at coastradio.org.